Yeah, I'm Dan. I work in Ralph's group at KCL. This is Eric. He works here at Charité and Ingolf's group. Recently, we discovered that we were both working on, or at least playing around with, these heterogeneous direct inversion methods for MRE reconstruction. And so we decided we should get together, collaborate on this, and compare and contrast what we were doing and across both of our groups, particularly focused on multi-frequency data. And as of this point, we're curious about a lot of the numeric specifics, so stuff like finite difference versus finite element. So I'll go into a little bit more of the details of our motivations. We'll go over the methods and just some preliminary results we've seen thus far. So of course, there's plenty of reconstruction methods for MRE out in the literature. What we've seen, and what obviously people know, this is it's sensitive, it's an inverse problem, so numerical details matter. And that's what we're really curious about here. We want to compare and contrast what we're doing and really try to hone in on which numerical details have the biggest impact and what we can do to increase robustness, decrease sensitivity, that kind of stuff. Let's see. So our two groups have been obviously working on MRE for a long time. Here at Charité, they do a lot of multi-frequency data and a lot of pre-processing and denoising. Recently, Eric's been working on these heterogeneous reconstruction methods, specifically focused on multi-frequency data. Since I've been at KCL, I've done a lot of finite element reconstruction in different formulations, so local versus heterogeneous, what to do with the pressure wave, all sorts of different things. So we're trying to combine our efforts here. So here's the background slide with our favorite equation. This is the isotropic linear elasticity equations in the incompressible and time harmonic form. So of course, this is what we want to invert to find G, the shear modulus. Right now, to consider the pressure wave, at least in this iteration of our work, we're assuming we can filter this out with a high-pass filter. So our equations just become this form. So this is what we're trying to invert now for G. The idea at this point is to pre-calculate derivatives and use ordinary least squares, and of course, multi-frequency data. Maybe I should add one of the motivations is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the heterogeneous direct inversions have had a lot of success. I think they've had some, but it seems like a good method overall, and it's something we want to try to work on and make better. So one of the ideas is that multi-frequency data could help this, and hopefully if we kind of combine forces, we can try to get this method in a bit better place. So I'll hand it over.
So I just wanted to walk through a couple of reasons why one might be interested in pursuing this approach to MRE reconstruction. And so this first one is that it eliminates this boundary that you have to deal with one way or another. And you can see that in the general, if you look at the 1D case, first of all, it's a first order PDE in 3D, but I'll get back to the fact that it's first order. That's pretty significant. And here, looking at the general solution, it's easy to see that with one frequency, you need to account for this mu zero, and with two frequencies, you can factor it out. Oh, and I should add that you don't have to have different frequencies. You need two different fields only, but you'd need to know they were decorrelated. So that is one of the main arguments for multi-frequency, is that in principle, with the different frequencies, you would guarantee that they're decorrelated. And then this second point just involves, again, looking at the 1D linear system to invert to solve a mu. And if you had some kind of a drop out of your signal or some kind of zeroing out of something in here, you could no longer invert this matrix without regularization. But when you have multiple frequencies and you're then projecting that onto a space with less dimensions, then there is the possibility that you will have an invertible matrix without having to regularize, right? Which is sort of a fancy way of saying that you might be able to maintain more sharpness of detail and things like that. And then this is a point that I've never seen raised, but some mathematicians I point to, we've talked about it. Most people, when they learn mechanics, learn the forward elasticity problem. This is an elliptical PDE of second order. But that's not what we work on, right? We work on the inverse problem. This is a first order PDE. And these two things have very different properties, right? Because a first order PDE can have jumps or discontinuities in the field. Whereas, generally speaking, an elliptical second order PDE is not only smooth, it has smooth first derivatives. So you have quite a strong mismatch there in certain ways. And when you are approximating the inverse problem by using forward solves, then you're trying to approximate a potentially discontinuous field, which of course in the body is exactly what you have, with a very heavily smooth estimation. And getting that stable is a challenge. So when you do a direct inversion instead, you can handle this first order PDE directly using stable methods and bases designed for first order PDEs. And so here's the method that I had a poster on this at the last ISMRM, and I've actually been kind of developing it ever since. But this is the finite difference reconstruction that combines all the different frequencies. It takes some staring at if you're not used to it, so ask me anything you like about this later.
All right. So in the finite element formulation, we start with the weak form. So these are the same equations. We've just multiplied by a test function and integrated. Typically, what's done in MRE reconstruction is that the test function is assumed to be zero on the boundary, so we nicely remove all the boundary terms. This is nice, and then standard finite elements leads to a discretization that we can write in matrix notation. Of course, this is over multiple frequencies for this work, and then what we usually find with the finite element methods is that we need some amount of regularization, so we can add a weighting term here to smooth out the stiffness that we're solving for. So what we've looked at so far, we've applied these methods to a gel phantom, abdominal, and brain data. All of these are multi-frequency. And what Eric's done to all these data, I guess what I, as a reconstruction person, would consider pre-processing, is phase unwrapping, denoising, and high-pass filtering, again, to remove the pressure wave. So we'll just show a few of the initial results we've found so far. So something we were interested in is what actually happens to the system and the result as we add additional frequencies. Eric mentioned that the conditioning of the system should improve as we add additional frequencies, and we can see that is generally the case. As we go from 1 to 2 to 3 data sets or frequencies, we can see the condition number of the system that we're solving decrease, which is good. This is better conditioning. One way this might manifest itself as far as the result is, one thing we can think about looking at anyways, is the variation of the stiffness. So especially in the gel phantom here, this should be constant stiffness. And as we add frequencies or add data, we can see that the, especially for these two methods, the variation drops quite a bit. I'm wondering if maybe for the FEM method here, the regularization was a bit too high and we just didn't see the decrease. I'm not sure though. With the brain, of course, it's not constant, but still we do see some decrease in variation as we add frequencies, which is nice. So we see some smoothing out, probably physically valid smoothing out as we add data. Back to Eric.
And so here's kind of the one finding I have so far. First of all, if you've ever worked on reconstruction, you will not be shocked to see that these are despite all the pre-processing being identical, these results are not the same. But one thing that happened here that I think plugs into Armando's discussion earlier with the numerics and so forth is on the left, you see this Helmholtz result. This is what Helmholtz kind of looks like before you clean it up. And then in the middle is my method using a centered difference. And I, part of this is cut off, I'm sorry to say, but I'll tell you what it is about. So that's what I'd really like to use. But you can see that it already heats up the result compared to the Helmholtz, just this choice of centered difference. Now, what you can't see because it's blocked is below, I simply switched my method to a forward difference, yeah, which, for reasons I could tell you another time if you want, makes it a little bit more like how the derivatives are being estimated in the Helmholtz. And you can see the values fell right back in line with the Helmholtz there. So, I mean, I've been looking at these little details for a long time. Even I was really surprised that changing from a forward to a centered difference caused things to heat up by over 10% for sure, maybe 15. And then, so the point of this slide is not that the FEM method on the right is different. That doesn't really matter. The key to this investigation we're doing together is we'll figure out how it relates to these other images too, and we'll figure out how to what needs to happen in the FEM so that it also falls into line, and then we can proceed forward with other concerns about these methods. So just to show you some very preliminary images, again, I haven't cleaned these up because we're trying to get under the hood of these methods. But the Helmholtz is on the left, which is, you know, there's often a belief in the community that the assumption of local homogeneity reduces your resolution. And that's not quite right, because when you neglect the gradient, any gradient you do have is exaggerated. So in fact, I would say that the Helmholtz will sharpen your image unstably, but it will sharpen it, and if, more than probably any other method. And if you see something that's blurred in a Helmholtz, it's probably from poor numerical conditioning. Anyway, so that's in the middle is my first estimate, and in the right is Dan's, and it's the same relationship between all the values. So the center difference heats it up, and the FEM for now cools it down. That's what I'm taking it to the end. So I've already told you, one of these two discussion points, which is that even these minor changes to the implementation are changing the result a lot. This is totally apart from the things that we normally blame it on, like filtering, low-pass filtering, stuff like that. Also, as far as I'm concerned, right now these solves with the heterogeneous methods are too smooth. That has to do with the least squares being producing the smoothest admissible solution to the problem. And so sparsity promotion is the answer to that. And so for our future work, we'll be working on that. We'll be promoting sparsity in the solve and see if that can't get us a little bit more detail rendered in these methods. Also, like Dan said, he brings a lot to the table in terms of handling the pressure term differently, handling integration by parts, and handling regularization as well, actually. And also, this will be the last time I ever present finite differences work other than a point of comparison. I'm moving to finite volumes, which are considered a good stable basis for PDEs of order one. And we'd like to thank our teams, and that is the pile of mathematicians who I've managed to twist their arm and get them to help me try to move this problem forward. So thank you, and are there any questions?
Time for one or two questions.
Okay, yeah. You have a parameter for this alpha, right? This
what?
You have a parameter in your finite element method, this alpha regularization parameter, yeah? How sensitive the results to this parameter? So if you change, if you increase it or?
Okay.
So that's the regularization.
Regularization weighting.
Okay, that's the regularization weighting parameter. So generally, as you increase that, it will weight the Laplacian of the stiffness higher in the minimization. So it will try to reduce that, thereby smoothing the result. So a really high one will smooth everything and wash it out. Is that the question?
So if your result you show is for one parameter, so but if you change it, would you get very different one? Also, how?
Yeah, I guess the idea would be to have it as small as possible.
Okay, this is
to retain as much detail as possible. So for these, I tried to pick something that gave
this was
just high enough so that there wasn't any kind of checkerboarding in the result.
Okay.
No, I have never worked on that aspect of the problem, but I'd be interested to get suggestions on how to do it.
Same.